It is Monday, February 3rd, 2014, and this is episode 53 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell. Joining me tonight, as always, is Mr. Andrew Callett.
Good evening, Jerry. How are you, sir?
Excellent, excellent. And as usual, the thoughts and opinions we express in this podcast are ours and very fortunately don't necessarily represent those of our employer.
Indeed.
So starting off, I had a very brief conversation with Bob, and he wanted me to pass on just a very brief tidbit. If you are going to be clicking on crap in your email, you should not do that using an account that has domain admin rights.
Crazy talk.
I know. I can only imagine what horror precipitated that.
That's a good question. Hey, before we get into stories, what'd you think about the Super Bowl? That's enough on that. Let's move on to stories.
Yeah, right. There was a Super Bowl? I wrote an awesome blog post while that was on last night.
2 nights ago. No, yeah, last night. I don't even know what day it is.
Jesus Christ, man.
See, I never stop working. That's the problem.
Wow. All right. So the first story we have tonight comes from CSO Online. And this is a follow-up on last week's story about Coke and their 55 missing laptops. It's a long article, but there's really only one important sentence in the entire article. And the author points out something that most everybody, including me, missed originally, and that is that the employee who stole these laptops was the one who is responsible for destroying those laptops. And you know, the article goes on to really go into depth on process visualization. So the author kind of rails on process failure, and I think one of the key takeaways for me is figuring out if you understand how to determine if your process was successfully followed. And clearly, in the case of Coke here, they didn't.
Yeah, I think he's got a good point here, which is that there was one person who was responsible for management destruction of laptops. Nobody was checking. There was no verification of that process. There was no accountability around that process. And this person clearly figured that out and got away with it. So the question becomes, are you just trusting the process, or do you have accountability verification built into your process? And I think that's key. It's like, you know, when you're doing firewall changes and you've got one person who creates the change, another person audits it and commits it. Seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the point. And, clearly he has some stuff to sell because.
Right. The latter half of the article goes into, and that's why you need my special patented magic stuff.
It is interesting. He points out something that I've actually seen in the field sometimes is, you know, when you've got a business process, what I'll call an informal business process, when you actually document it, sometimes it's really difficult to see what it actually looks like on paper.
Yeah.
It sometimes is ugly.
Yeah, and you know, it's not a bad thing to be able to visualize your process. I just think he's a little bit of a, if that's his hammer, everything becomes a visualization nail sort of thing. But anyway, that's off topic. But fair the article enough. Itself is... Yep. Interesting.
Yeah, and again, the point is not all of these problems are cyber related. some things are just basic inventory management and who's watching the till kind of problem.
Yep, but they're all interrelated nowadays.
Yep, that's true. All right, so next story we have comes from the MIT Technology Review. And I thought this was a pretty cool story. Now, I'm going to couch this that it is vaporware right now. It doesn't exist outside of the lab. However, I think the concept is so cool, it was worth mentioning. The idea here is to be able to encrypt your data, whether that's a pot of credit card numbers or email addresses or passwords or whatever. But it's encrypted in such a way that whatever decryption key you would use, you would actually get back a set of reasonable looking data. And the idea being, you wouldn't ever know if you actually decrypted it or not, or versus just gotten back some random crap.
You know, I was thinking about this. And first of all, I appreciate your caveat that you threw up front that comes from me harassing Jerry before the show about him clearly having an investment in whatever company this is because they don't exist yet.
And billions and billions of dollars I have.
And I just I have a pet peeve of academic security that doesn't work in the real world. And I have a pet peeve when people say, well, you know, it worked well in the lab, or theoretically it should work. Things don't always work the same way in the real world when you get out of your nice, shiny, happy lab. So I am not an encryption expert, but as we were just now talking about this, I was thinking about it. All right, so here's the idea. I have a whole bunch of information and some sort of structure, and no matter which way I try to decrypt it, I get back something that appears to be that same structure. Therefore, not knowing if I encrypt it or not. But assuming this is symmetrical key encryption, wouldn't I be able to validate that by re-encrypting it again?
Conceivably. I you know, unfortunately, there is almost no detail on how this actually works.
But so it's interesting.
Yeah, I
like the concept in general of where you can, you know, mislead and slow down and, you know, make life more difficult for your attackers. Always a great idea. Always a great idea. And, you know, honey encryption is good. I kind of like that name. I might call it honey badger encryption because it don't care.
See, when I read the title of the article, the thing I thought they were going to be talking about was encrypting, you know, random crap.
Sure.
And dropping that around and tying them up, you know, naming it passwords dot, you know, .db or whatever. And basically forcing or at least tricking attackers into sinking a lot of time into something they could never hope to decrypt. And, you know, obviously that's not what it turned out to be. However, I think the concept is interesting. It'll be interesting to see if this ever is able to turn into something usable in the real world.
Yeah, you know, keep an eye on it.
Yep.
It does bring up some other interesting ideas of the honey concept, which is, you know, putting fake passwords out there and accounts and see if they're ever used, putting fake credit card information out there and see if it's ever passed over DLP, you know, things that you know are illegitimate. And if you ever see it, that means somebody's done something inappropriate, I think is an interesting technique, though.
Absolutely, especially if you can, you know, key on, I know DLP, you brought up a really good point here. You know, DLP is kind of the bane of many an IT shop because it's very noisy, it's a pain in the butt. But if you are able to, you know, take some random crap data like that, you know, you can look for that, you know, some very unique attribute of that data that should never pass through the DLP. And if it does, you know, somebody's doing something they shouldn't. So I think that's a good opportunity. I really like that idea.
Yeah, you can do some really clever stuff with that. You know, Marcus Radom actually had a really good ideas way back in the day. It's kind of where I first started thinking about some of the stuff of setting up all sorts of false honeyed accounts and data and watching for any touch on that data.
Yeah. There's, I'm trying to remember where the article I read was. I think it was actually in a John Strand's book on offensive security, but basically it was setting up bogus IDs and, you know, basically disabling them, but turning on pretty significant alerting if somebody actually tries to log in.
Yeah. So, you know, it's either a scanner, you know, or an auditor or somebody bad.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So next story we have comes from Network World, and the title is Target Credential Theft Highlights Third-Party Vendor Risk. So before I jump into the story, I want to start off with a complaint.
Okay.
Dum, dum, dum. So this is this announcement by Target that a vendor's stolen credential was involved in the hack has just been all over the world and back. And, you know, people are trying to figure out, well, which vendor was it? Which portal did they get in? And I think it's important to keep in mind, Target gave absolutely no context to that. All they said was, we would like to confirm, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, right? But we'll confirm that a vendor's credential was stolen and used in the attack, was basically what they said. And what's interesting to me is, you know, we saw that that statement came out a couple of days after all of the furor about the username and password that was found embedded in the point of sale malware. And I have to wonder, are they actually talking about that username and password that was in the malware?
Well, we don't know. We have no idea.
We don't know. Exactly.
Everyone is jumping to the conclusion that the BMC software, which is what this username and password was associated with, is somehow involved, but that could be coincidental.
I think it's almost certainly going to be coincidental. I think it
was.
But we
don't know.
Yeah, but we don't know. But again, you know, there's actually no linkage other than the appearance of the username. It to me, it seems like it was a matter of convenience, because it was a username and password that these POS terminals could use to upload their card data to a central server. And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't any implication that BMC software was involved. It was just
is plausible that they intentionally use something like that so that a casual admin looking at it would say, "Oh, that's supposed to be there."
Absolutely. And I don't know.
I
think you're right on there.
So a lot of people, and I was actually going to kind of jump onto the end of this article, they start off with some really interesting, valid points here, and then jump quickly into, therefore, this, that, and the other thing, which is not a valid piece of information yet. Anyway, so go ahead.
Anyhow, so that notwithstanding, right, I thought the point about vendor risk is an interesting topic in itself. I think the point that I want to bring up, and you too, is that we really don't have any evidence that vendors were actually implicated, right? We don't really know the context of what Target was talking about relative to the password. And there's really no indication that BMC was involved in any material way. But again, vendors are a really significant problem. If you go back and read the DBIR from 2013, you know, you can look and see that vendors are a common attack vector into an organization, because, you know, you spend all sorts of money and time and processes and investment in technology to protect your systems, and then you let in some vendor who is kind of fly by night from a security perspective. You know, they're in your network, and so they're kind of an extension of you. And one of the points they bring up here is that a lot of companies, you know, for whatever reason, have a vendor management program, but that generally consists of a questionnaire that gets sent to them to the vendor once and never again. And, you know, I've been on both sides of that equation, and it's like a kabuki dance. You know, everybody kind of knows
Could you demonstrate a kabuki dance for us, Jerry?
Well, after the show.
All right.
I'll go put my robe on.
Oh, my. Yeah, right. Everybody on both sides of that is trying to answer as best they can to get the business.
Yes.
And, you know, how do you audit that? How do you check that? So it goes back to our old, old advice. Assume you've been breached. How are you going to find it?
Right. Because if you assume that, you're going to think that, you know, you're going to assume that your vendor is a source of attack. And what should you do to mitigate that?
Yeah, while still letting business flow.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just want to jump on, you know, specifically here where in this article where they start to go off the rails.
Have
the blog, Krebs on Security, which we like Krebs. He's a great guy. He knows his stuff. Report Tuesday that hackers might have entered Target's network, breaking into an IT manager software suite by BMC Software. No, that is incorrect. In no way did Krebs speculate that the BMC software was used for the initial intrusion into the network. Not true. If anything, the primary speculation we've seen is some sort of SQL injection against some sort of perimeter website. The article continues. From there, the hackers might have moved laterally through the corporate network, eventually finding their way to the POS systems. Well, that's a heck of a speculation.
You think?
So, these guys, it's tough. I get it. This is a complex thing. My whole point about this is we have to be very careful what we take as gospel fact and what we take as speculation. And something this easily can get twisted so slightly and then become taken as fact. And we, as defenders, have to know the absolute facts on the ground, not what maybe happened or could have happened, to understand what really occurred and how we take lessons away into our environment.
Yeah, that's fair. Although I do like wildly speculating.
Well, there's a place for that, right? I'm a big fan of wargaming things out and thinking through what could happen and what. But if you want to be authoritative about an actual event,
absolutely,
get your facts straight.
You're right on. And by the way, if you follow Krebs on Twitter, you'll see he is just beside himself with all sorts of news outlets who are misquoting him.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know, he's constantly trying to set the record straight about stuff he didn't actually say.
That's rolling the rock uphill, man.
Yeah, yeah. Tough. That's tough. But, you know, it comes with the territory of being Krebs, I guess.
So, rants aside, I think the key takeaway from this is understand the threat vectors that third parties present in your environment and how you're going to mitigate against those threats, I think is the key takeaway here. And software in your environment. But again, I think the world is shifting towards a thought process that all things could be hostile. How are you going to cope with that?
Yes. Well said. All right. Next story. Also from Network World. We've got some Network World love today. The title of this story is Positioning Your Institution's Response in the Face of a Data Breach. And this is a very, very financial institution-centric story. But I think it's got some lessons for everybody. And one of the key points they make is that in the event of a data breach, you have an opportunity to be a kind of a leader, right? And have a well thought out plan, have a well functioning communication channel to your customers, and basically not look like you're kind of falling all over yourself. And I think one of the interesting things about the time we live in now is it's becoming much less stigmatic, if that's a word, to have a breach, right? Because it's everywhere. Everybody's having a breach. I mean, friggin' Target, where everybody in the U.S. shops, had, you know, one of the largest breaches ever here. And so I think it's becoming more about how you handle the breach than whether you actually had one.
Sad but true.
So, you know, they also point out that you should learn from your breaches and use that information to prevent future breaches, which hopefully is very self-explanatory to everybody. They do point out a couple of things, brief stats, right? That 57% of malware that's self-detected isn't reported. Now, that number is presented without any context. I assume what they're talking about is, you know, I'm happily working on my computer at work and I get a, you know, I get a virus and it gets cleaned and I don't report it. I am assuming that's what they're talking about, but, you know.
And how exactly would you capture that stat?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
I mean, assuming they have a modern antivirus, anti-malware system, it's probably rolling up stats to local centralized management. And I'm sure that, you know, they probably could go do a survey of, you know, target organizations. How many viruses did you detect that didn't lead to a notification, I guess. But then that's saying that 43% led to notification. I have trouble with that.
Well, I think even the concept of what constitutes a notification is kind of ambiguous. Are they talking about notifying your internal security department or notifying law enforcement? Or, you know, obviously it's not notifying law enforcement. I mean,
I notify Bob who's walking down the street outside. Not your Bob, different Bob.
Different Bob?
Yeah, the homeless Bob.
It's a good idea. As long as you're telling somebody.
But, you know, the other key takeaway here is that I get, and I don't think they harped on this enough, is I would say have a plan for all this before you're into a breach situation and practice it.
Yes.
If you feel there's ever going to be a situation where you've got to notify your customers or you know, a compliance agency or something along those lines, I highly recommend you have that as a written plan signed off by all parties well ahead of that happening and practice it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point. If whatever kind of industry you're in, if you're a retail company who processes credit cards, you know, think about how you would notify your customers. If you are, you know, I don't know, an insurance company, think about how you would notify them if their records get stolen and on and on, you know, what is the message, but how are you going to deliver the message? You know, are you going to have them, are you going to set up a call center? You know, what are you going to do? I know one of the big complaints about Target was a couple of things, right? One was they waited, and two was once they did go public, people had a real hard time calling Target to get information. You know, and I know a lot of people were pretty frustrated because, you know, they would call Target and they would be on hold for a long time and get frustrated and hang up. And, you know, obviously that's not the thing that you want to have happen. Although I would say at the same time, you want to make sure it's clear what people should do, because in the case of Target, I would bet you 90% of those people that called didn't want to talk to Target. They wanted to talk to their bank.
Yeah, that's true. Well, but let's also be clear. How are you going to staff for 40 million or 110 million? That's such a weird pocket case, right? Not that you shouldn't do something right, but...
Well, we're not all Target, though.
That's true. We all are targets.
We all are targets, but we are not all Target.
Yeah.
However, though, you need to have something, right? I mean, some kind of contingency plan, because whatever it is.
But all that being said, agreed, 100%. I think you bring up a great point. And I really feel that your executive management and your lawyers and everybody else are going to be a lot more palatable to discussing the situation when you're not in the middle of a huge PR crisis.
Yeah, and you make bad decisions. I mean,
it's true.
Just human nature makes bad decisions when you're under the gun like that. And, you know, you need to know who's going to deliver the message. Are you going to have your CEO on camera like Target did, delivering a conciliatory message? Or, you know, what are you going to do? What's your game plan going to be?
who's going to be in charge, who's got what, you know, situations under their purview. These are all things you really should figure out ahead of time.
Absolutely. And in many ways, it's very much like a disaster recovery plan. It's just a different slant on that.
I mean, we could do a whole show on all the nuances of this, but, you know, the key here is just start thinking about this stuff ahead of time. Now, the reality is you could also plan for every possible eventuality and kill yourself with, you know, forward planning. So, you know, use the 80-20 rule here, but the reality is go for the things that are most likely to hit you based on what you see hitting your peers.
Yeah, absolutely. And in particular, what do you have that's sensitive? You know, are you a data broker or are you a coffee shop? What do you have to lose?
Right.
All right. The last story we have also comes from Network World. And the title of this one is Tor-enabled malware stole credit card data from POS systems. By the way, that's redundant. At dozens of retailers. It's the ATM machine, right?
Can I have your PIN number?
There you go. The Department of Redundancy Department. So this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One thing, being where I'm at, I read a lot about these breaches and I see a lot about these breaches. And there is what feels like a definite uptick in attacks on POS in many different ways. And in this case, there's a piece of malware called Chewbacca, which is an awesome name for a piece of malware. I'll just say that. But it works very much like most of the things we've talked about recently. You know, whether you're talking about Black POS or Dexter is the other big one. The difference here is not only does it scrape RAM for unencrypted card data, it uses Tor for its command and control. And, you know, that's a difficult thing to track down because obviously using Tor adds a pretty significant amount of complexity to tracking down where those numbers are going and who owns that server and whatnot. Still not impossible, as we've seen in, like Silk Road. But, you know, I think, honestly, this is an easy one to defend against for most companies that of any substantial size. Although I will say, one thing I noticed is, you know, it's an article that garnered a story that garnered a whole article in Network World, but there was 119 terminals across 45 different retailers. So it's not a giant thing. And I'm wondering if most of these retailers, you know, kind of doing the number, there aren't many terminals per retailer here. If they're kind of smallish, you know, convenience store type operations that maybe don't have the ability to defend it against it. But anyway, I'm going to go back onto my high horse and say, damn it, block Tor.
But then how would the NSA monitor us?
You're hurting my head.
No, you really should be filtering your outbound firewall rules. Seriously. Seriously. Come on, stop being lazy.
Seriously.
Figure out what needs to go out of your network and only let that out.
And Tor ain't it. Unless you're a researcher or something. or you know, you're into hitmen and drugs. And I mean, hey, I'm not going to judge. Well, maybe I will, but don't let Tor out.
Let's just stop making it easy for these guys. Seriously.
Yes. Yes. Block Tor, run application whitelisting. You know, one of the things they pointed out here, and it made my head hurt a little bit, is that Chewbacca in its current form is detectable by about 80% of commercial AV. And what they point out here is that POS terminals aren't running AV for the most part.
No, they're embedded machines, my friend.
Which, by the way, I want to take a little tangent for a second. You know, I've been thinking about this for a little bit, and it occurred to me today, what you just said is an interesting point. You know, these POS terminals are kind of like black boxes.
Yep.
And I wonder what ability retailers have the ability to modify them. You know, if I wanted to install AV on them, could I? If I wanted to install application whitelisting on them, could I? I mean, I know they're running Windows, but we also know that there's a lot of Windows-based appliances where it's, you know, kind of the no user serviceable parts inside. You know, you treat it as a black box.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely correct. And I think most people look at it that way. And I think it comes back to, easier said than done, network-based activity monitoring, anomaly detection for all these boxes we can't manage directly. I think that's our only option.
And put them on their own network.
Well, they are on their own network with everything else.
Don't make them accessible from the internet. I mean,
what's wrong with a big flat Class A? I don't understand.
Jesus Christ.
On a stick with raspberry sauce. But I don't see the problem here with information wants to be free.
Well, that is a solution here, is we find a way to make it, you know, make society function with all of our data public.
No, you know what? It's funny, when we started doing these, the first five times you say something, it's you know, it sounds really meaningful. The 12th time you say segregate your network, you know, you start getting a little punchy.
Yes.
I shouldn't, because we're picking up new listeners all the time, and I shouldn't assume everybody's heard this 1,000 times. And I that's wrong of me. That is not being professional. And damn it, we're professionals.
If anything, we are professionals. Mm-hmm. Don't try this at home.
So, yes, segment your network. And that doesn't just mean with a router. That means with some sort of access control device.
With actual well-thought-out rules.
Right. It is a pain in the ass, yes. It will probably slow down change control. This may be culturally troubling. You will need support from management to do this. It will not be easy. But you will save yourself so much pain.
Absolutely. I mean, look, if you were a retailer, pardon the pun, but you got a target on your back right now.
Yeah, you are the hot commodity.
They are coming after you. So, anyhow. That's the last story. Wow.
Yeah, quick show.
Yeah, quick show.
You know, before we run, we did have some listener feedback, which, by the way, we love listener feedback. Please, please send us feedback, good, bad, and different. Asking about how do we help sell management on some of these initiatives, which is a great question. And we're going to work on that. We're going to work on, you know, how to talk about that, and we're going to have it in a future show.
I thought that was an awesome question.
Yeah.
By the way,
the challenge here is, I can tell you right now, a lot of our advice is going to be very generic because it's very situational to your culture and your environment. But we'll try to bring to you our thought process of how to do that. But I think we need some time to put our thoughts together, write that up, and have a coherent, cogent answer.
Absolutely. And I think we both have some experience trying to convince our respective management teams of this. So, you know, I think we both probably have some tricks we can pull out.
It's true. You know, the other thing in reflecting on last week's snowpocalypse of Atlanta, I was really thinking about, from a DR standpoint, did any companies invoke their DR plan? Did it matter? Did anybody, you know, have to go to that level of concern? What if people suddenly couldn't use the roads for 12 hours? interesting thing to think about if you're in a mission critical environment. And
yeah, does your DR plan require your people to get to the DR site? Is a really common problem I've seen with DR plans.
And what are your assumptions built into that? Right. Do you have assumption that your folks working at home have power? Have internet? What if they don't?
Or care about work?
Right. Or that's true. That's the big picture, right? What if they're stuck at home, roads are clogged, and they have no power or no internet? Do you have a backup plan?
Right.
So going back to your wild speculation, you know, these are kind of things that I think about a little bit from time to time.
Well, that's how you get prepared.
Now I'm going to go count my MREs in the basement.
Jeez. All right, then. It has been another wonderful edition of the Defensive Security Podcast. We definitely appreciate your listening and your time. And, you know, as Mr. Callett said, we do honestly like hearing from listeners. And if you have any ideas or feedback or things that you'd like us to talk about, you know, send it in. We're generally pretty nice. I mean, I think I've only yelled about, 10 or 20 people?
Are we talking today, this week? No,
well, yeah, I guess in the last couple of weeks on email. It was, yeah.
Well, yelling's a strong term.
True.
Insulting is probably.
I like this. I mean, my cap locks key was stuck, right?
No, Jerry's much nicer than I am.
Anyhow, we honestly do appreciate everybody listening and all the emails we get. So you can send us an email to info@defensivesecurity.org. You can find the show and the links to all of the stories we talk about on the website at www.defensivesecurity.org. And you can follow us on Twitter @DefensiveSec. You can follow Mr. Callett @Lurg. You can follow me @MaliciousLink. And with that, I'm going to call it a night. Have a great week, everyone.
See you guys.
Bye.